from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Grab a bib, because today we have an all-food show. I'll kick it off with a preview of this year's Dig In event.
Yum! Then I get to sample some treats from the upcoming Greek Fest.
And for dessert, I'll try the new Food for Thought book, and we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Dozens of Indiana's highest quality chefs, brewers, vintners, farmers, and food producers will be in the White River State Park Celebration Plaza on Sunday, August 26th for the third annual Dig In. Sharon Gamble invited Indiana food enthusiast Eric Freeman in to tell us how we can nosh our way through the best that the state has to offer.
Okay, it's always time in my book to talk about food, but now we're really going to talk about food. How many years is this for Dig In?
This is year three.
Woohoo!
Exactly.
Third time's a charm.
That's right.
And remind us of why it got started.
Dig In is really not a food festival, Sharon. It's really an attempt to educate Hoosiers about what is grown and raised in the state and how it can be prepared at home. But while
doesn't mean you can't eat.
It doesn't mean you can't eat. I was just going to say, and while you're learning all that, you're having a great time eating and drinking Indiana beers and wines and foods.
So what has, 3 years isn't that long, but I suspect things have changed behind the scenes. I feel as though there's been kind of a sea change in our state pride over being able to create our own meals here, being more locavore oriented. Is that true or is that my imagination?
No, it is true. And it's funny, Dig In wasn't a result of that. I think both of that buy local movement and the idea for Dig In just seemed to happen at the same time. It was dumb luck, but wow, how lucky it has been for us, because it does drive attendance. It's an opportunity for people to learn that, you know, Indiana is the largest producer of duck in the country, largest producer of perch in the country. I mean, we all think about Indiana in terms of beef and pork, and it certainly is beef and pork in corn, but it's a lot more than that. You know, it's mint and like I say, lamb and duck.
I have to ask, how did we get to be the top producer of duck?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's great because one seems to know that, and they all say duck. You know, it's the response you just had. So,
and perch, this is farm-raised.
Farm-raised up in Red Key, largely, and it's a huge perch operation. We have a chef using perch at the event from there. Bison, goat, just about everything. And that's the intent, to show what comes from Indiana and how it can be made at home.
Sure. Talk to me about, this has been an unusual summer. Have there been logistical problems with the drought lining up the participants in
not the
this
participants,
year's participants,
the farmers, and not a lot of problem. Because Indiana's produce and proteins are so robust. If some sweet corn farmer, let's say, is having trouble because of the drought, there are other sweet corn farmers.
Got it. And
sweet corn was an issue for us early on. We have one chef in particular that makes a sweet corn chowder. It was a hit last year. I tell you, the ingredients, Sharon, are butter, cream, and sweet corn. Can you go wrong with that? And he's coming back with those same ingredients, but we were having a little trouble with the sweet corn, but
pure
we found it.
Simple.
Exactly.
So Dig In will feature things that are grown here, but also things that are artisanally produced here.
That's right.
So, for example, you might have a chance to try a goat cheese that is obviously not grown here, but maybe made from local dairy cows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Trader's Point is involved as not only as a restaurant, the Loft of Trader's Point will be there as a restaurant, but also as a provider of milk and cheese for chefs that need that in their dish. All of the dishes are sourced from Indiana. The produce and the proteins, which are the meats, all come from Indiana farmers.
So we'll be sampling these things, but how do we talk to me about the education piece. How do we learn?
Well, everyone upon arrival gets what we call the passport. And the passport really is more than a program. It's a little booklet. And if listeners came last year, it's the same thing last year. It links the dish and the chef to the farmer and where that farmer is. So if you're interested in, if you have a dish that has lamb in it and you really like it and you're interested in the lamb, you know where to reach the lamb farmer.
Hmm.
So that's one way. The passport really provides that education. And it you would be amazed how many people take it home. And it's designed to be taken home.
Sure.
Then there's also the speaker series that runs every 45 minutes all day long, and it's designed to help kind of complement how do you pair wines with foods, how do you pair beers with foods, and then just a lot of other things. We have speakers this year talking about a food hub that's being developed in central Indiana.
What's that?
It's the extension agent in Hancock County is created. There's only 12 in the country, and there are no food hubs in Indiana, and it really is kind of a clearinghouse for farmers to use for crops or even gardeners. If you have a large garden and you have extra tomatoes that you don't know what to do with, the food hub can take them and then help get them to a restaurant owner that needs locally sourced tomatoes or a grocer that's looking for it. So it's really just a clearinghouse to help everybody expand their businesses but focus locally. And it's going to be a central Indiana food hub. So it's more than just Indianapolis. Like I say, I think largely it'll be based in Hancock County, but it'll take in multiple counties.
Smart idea.
Come to Dig In and learn more because that's part of the speaker series. And Sharon, let me also say, because this is really important because it gets confusing, the ticket price to get in covers everything. It's not one of those deals where you buy a ticket to get in and then you buy the tastes and the beers. The ticket price gets you everything. Once you get inside, all of the tastes, the wines, the beers, the artisan products that you mentioned, and the chef's dishes are all part of the ticket.
And there's a little bit higher ticket price, a VIP ticket. Why would I buy one of those?
Well, if you're a real foodie and you want to come in at 11 o'clock, an hour early,
got it.
We're only selling 1,000 of those, and the intent is to give 1,000 people or up to 1,000 people who are interested in actually talking with the chefs and talking with the farmers and talking with the vintners and brewers an opportunity to do that before it gets crowded.
And at the risk of sounding like a typical public radio wonk, I will say that this is a family-friendly event. You have a lower price ticket for children. Children under five can get in for free, a $10 ticket for children 5 to 10. The risk of sounding like, oh, yeah, so we're bringing children along as foodies at the age of 9 or 10. There's nothing wrong with children learning where food comes from.
You know, Sharon, there's not. And we've had the conversation about should we try to have a chef try to create some sort of artisanal macaroni and cheese or chicken nugget. And the decision was no, let them come and learn just like the adults learn. I mean, it's an education. No, we do have things like Nicey Treat is coming. Mm-hmm. So we'll have frozen treats.
They're my neighbors.
Are they really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, Indiana Fruits will be used in the Nicey Treat he has. Natural Born Juicers will be there with a juice. There's a lot of things that kids really will like to eat.
What's your favorite? Give me your...
Sharon.
None of your participants are listening, so you can name favorites without making the others think they aren't pretty.
You know, I mentioned that corn chowder, and I'm a big sweet corn fan, so I'm going to have to go with that. And that's Circle City Soups. It's here in town, down at the City Market, and he just does a heck of a job with that sweet corn chowder. He really does.
Now, talk to me about logistics, because there's electrical, there's refrigeration, is some of the cooking on site, or is everything prepared and kept warm? Somewhere else and kept warm here?
Some is prepared on site. Chefs bring grills. I mean, it is a logistical
hairball.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, chefs bring grills and grill on site. Some come totally prepped. Almost all, though, put the tastes into the cup or the bowl or the plate or whatever the serving utensil is there on site. So you have an opportunity while you're waiting for him or her to do that to actually have a little conversation about, you know, what's in this? How'd you make it? So even if you're not really a foodie but just food curious, this is a neat event.
Oh, I just had a vision, Eric, of a taste of a dig-in food truck.
Oh, there you go. Hey, you know, Sharon, I'm glad you said that. We have four food trucks
as
part of the
event. Who's coming?
Duos, Scratch Truck, Spice Box, some of the hottest ones, and then Chef JJ's Big Green Bistro, which was there last year, will be back again.
Nice.
And the food trucks will be on the bridge between White River State Park and the zoo. And that's kind of the new hook this year. The big angle is we're adding some food trucks.
Hey, listen, you do this both professionally, and I happen to know that you're a bit of a personal foodie as well. What do you make of the growth in the food trucks? truck scene in the last year.
It has really exploded, I'll tell you that. I've been working with Matt Kornmeyer, that owns Scratch Truck, to help me get the food trucks together, and he's just done a heck of a job.
Well, you know, anybody who can bring bacon marmalade to the masses is kind of a food god in my book. Just saying.
And Sharon, I have to tell you that the food trucks also are sourcing all of their food ingredients locally.
Good.
So what they'll be serving that day also will come from Indiana Farms. So
excellent. So we've talked about food, but we should mention that, you know, if you're sampling all these lovely things, you might get thirsty at some point.
Thank you for that tee up. Yes, wineries. We'll have 7 wineries from all over the state, a lot of them from southern Indiana. I was looking through the list, and I think maybe 5 of the 7 are down along the Ohio River.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have 10 breweries, and I guess I've been told that I must say Three Floyds will be there. Apparently Three Floyds has a huge, huge following, and so that's a hook. But we also have Sun King and Upland and you know, some of the big favorites, but they're coming from all over the state. Crown Brewing's coming from Crown Point. New Albanian's coming up from New Albany. So breweries from all over the state, wineries largely from southern Indiana. Then we'll have the Indiana artisans back, so you can get things like Friddle candy and chocolates and syrup and the 240 sweet marshmallows out of Columbus.
Wait,
those
oversized
marshmallows.
Friddle candy? I'm not familiar.
Friddle candy. Carrie Abbott, she's here in town, produces a candy that's a cross between fudge and peanut brittle, hence
Ooh.
Friddle. And let me tell you, I have had it. It is worth coming
to
dig in just for Friddle.
Oh, that can't be any good.
It is really good. It really is. She does a great job.
All right, so you're going to put together your ideal meal from, not that you have time to eat on this day, I realize that, but if you could. So we know you're going to have the corn chowder.
Corn chowder.
What are you going to drink with it?
Oh, I tell you, I am a beer and a wine drinker, so I'll hit them all. And Sharon, that's kind of the neat thing. You can hit them all. Everybody's providing a sample, and then if you want to buy a glass of wine or buy a glass of beer, you can do that, but you can certainly get a sample of everything, which is great.
Your main course will be?
Oh, I can't do the corn chowder. You know, I'm kind of a fan of Joseph Dequi. It's coming back with the Wagyu slider. Their words, not mine. But it's, you know, Wagyu cattle are the cattle that Kobe beef comes from. And mm-hmm. that little slider of theirs is really exceptional.
Mm. And for dessert?
Oh, man. You know, I'm going to really hit Circle City here, but Circle City Sweets is coming with some candy that she's making from fruit and caramel, I think. It has a French name, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember it. But she's coming with those candies, and it sounds pretty darn good.
Mm. Hence the educational part.
There you go. Yeah.
You'll get the scoop.
Right.
Sharon Gamble with Dig In's Eric Freeman. 30 chefs from Indiana's finest restaurants will be participating in Dig In 2012. And there's kids' activities and beverages for adults, too. Dig In is Sunday, August 26th from noon to 5 p.m. at the White River State Park. You can learn more and get tickets at digindiana.org. Again, digindiana.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. The 39th annual Indianapolis Greek Festival does feature more than just food. There's drink, too. Okay, and there's live music, dancing, church tours, and much, much more, but the food is a big part of it, as Travis DiNicola found out from Mary Lee Paulus.
Mary Lee, Paula, Dean, welcome to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you. I want to make sure that we're introducing Paula Kaneda, because you're new this year, to coming on Art of the Matter. Dean Antonopoulos, always great to see you, and thanks for bringing some terrific food. Mary Lee Pappas, always a pleasure. 39th annual, is that right? Greek Fest?
Yes, it's our 39th year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow, how very cool is that? So, and once again, it is taking place up in Carmel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. It's at Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church.
Where it's been the past couple of years.
Absolutely, our new church at 106th and Shelbourne in Carmel. And you can get directions on our website, which is indiegreekfest.org.
Very good. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there are lots of things going on at Greek Fest that we want to talk about that are not all food related, but I kind of just want to jump into the food stuff because the food is what makes it so
Absolutely.
Much fun. You guys have brought stuff. I know you've got food, you've got wine, you've got menus, you've got pictures. What can we mm-hmm. expect this year at Greek Fest, food-wise?
Food-wise, we're adding we are making some improvements across the board with some of our food items. In the past, our gyro sandwiches have been kind of pre-cut, sliced gyro meat. This mm-hmm. year, we're going restaurant style. We're bringing the cones just like the restaurants have here in central Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll be cutting them fresh. They'll be on the spit rotating. We'll have 8 cones rotating at the same time, making sure that we're creating a lot of heat and wonderful smells.
And it smells good. Absolutely.
And wonderful aromas.
Is there a name for those cones? I mean, I can picture what you're talking about. They're like, you know, like maybe 2.5 feet tall. And
they're called the Euro cones.
Euro cones,
they just
okay.
look like a cone. They funnel a little bit downward.
Yeah.
But they are the cones that we're we'll be serving this year are 40 pounds each.
Wow.
And we'll be going through a lot of them.
That's pretty cool. A lot of pastries too, from just what I saw on the preview. I mean, there's always Greek pastries are fantastic, but it seems like you guys
we
are
have
really
over a dozen pastries.
Isn't it like 120 feet of pastries?
At least.
Yeah,
it's 60 feet aside, I think.
It's close to 60 feet aside. It's long. Mm-hmm. It's big.
Okay, so definitely bring your appetite. Is there like one pastry here that you want to like sort of highlight that you think like this one's just a really cool one? Paul, you've got one that you just really love?
Not really.
She loves them all.
I'm a big pastas fan. That's the Greek version of chocolate cake.
Okay.
And it is fantastic.
It is very good.
Yeah.
It is very good.
Cool. Okay. And then, so heroes and the pastries, spanakopita. What else are people going to be able to sample?
Another something new that we're featuring this year is our Athenian dinner. This year we're having it more like a sit-in dinner. We'll have a separate section on the north side of the festival grounds where people can go through a buffet line and then sit in a tent designated just for for this dinner. And this dinner will have Greek roast lamb, mm-hmm. Greek chicken, Greek rice, tiropitas and spanakopitas, of course, a Greek salad.
And peas.
We'll be, more of a eat-in type of, restaurant type of fare.
Nice, sit-down.
And atmosphere for some people that would like to have a little bit more privacy away from some of the hecticness.
The crazy fair festival. Now, for that sit-down, do you need special reservations or tickets?
No, it's just first come, first serve. Okay. The dinner meal will be going for, I think, $20 a piece. But again, it's a full course meal there. And there'll be soft drinks and wine available as well. Yeah. And speaking of wine, we've updated our wine list this year. We finally have gotten some really high quality wines
really
from Greece.
Stuff.
Nice.
It's hard to import these wines because they're scarcely used, you know, across mm-hmm. the country.
I was just thinking, you don't really see a lot of Greek wines in the wine shops. And
right,
stuff,
so. And as a matter of fact, we had a sommelier advise us on our selections, and he said he would be comfortable distributing these wines to not only Greek restaurants but restaurants across Central Indiana because nice. Again, very high quality. They remind me a lot of really good California wines. So we think we have our audience something to look forward to with
and
respect
both
to the
reds
wines.
And whites.
Both reds and whites. Yeah, we have a Merlot, mm-hmm. A Greek Merlot by Skouras. We have a port, St. John's Commanderia. Some whites, a really good Chardonnay called Almira,
mm-hmm.
and those are my favorites of the ones that are coming in. But all of them are really good. Even the house wine will be very good.
Yeah, I saw the name, the Domaine Skouras, for a number of these. It looks like that's one of the main vineyards, the Almeria Chardonnay, as well as some other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. Well, I'm looking forward to trying those. That's
yeah, they'll be fantastic.
And then some Greek beers, also Sun King, I know. That's going to always be good. You know, maybe Sun King isn't exactly Greek, but it works.
It's local.
Sun King, Apollo, Greek. I mean, there's a connection there.
It's local, right. You know, it's okay for us to help promote a local business, too.
Absolutely.
We've got a new flavor this year. We've also added their Sunlight cream ale, so that'll be nice.
Okay, now, things start at what time on Friday?
4 p.m.
4 p.m. Friday, and then Saturday pretty much all day?
At noon.
Saturday at noon, okay. Now, we did mention, in addition to all the food and wine and beverage, there's dancing, there's crafts, there's lots of other activities and stuff. What are some things people can look forward to this year?
They can look forward to our church tours, mm-hmm. To tour our beautiful church and see that.
And it's a stunning building.
Thank you. And to see what's underneath that big gold dome,
mm-hmm.
The Hellenic dance troupes perform throughout the evening Friday and throughout the day on Saturday. And those times are on our website, along with the full menu of our wines, our food, our pastry, the full menu mm-hmm. everyone can find on the website. We also have a marketplace where people can purchase icons, they can purchase T-shirts, and all sorts of other good Greek goodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course,
we have the kids' tent, which is nice, so that as whole families come out, the kids get a little bored walking around. We have a puppet show as a general rule. Mm-hmm. There's some face painting going on, a little arts and crafts for them to do. So it helps break up their day so they're not quite as fidgety.
Excellent. Good. Good, good. And, of course, you do not have to be Greek to go to Greek Fest.
Oh, absolutely not. We are there together all the time. We prefer to meet some new people.
Mm-hmm. And people can get tickets ahead of time as well as the night of, day of?
The tickets are available currently at Marsh supermarkets mm-hmm. Here in downtown and throughout the north side and some other selected area Marsh stores. We'll have them as well.
So I want to ask you about a couple more food things. I saw you guys have some really interesting calamari served with feta.
That's right.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm a big calamari fan. That sounds like a great idea. The one that really stood out for me, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Is it called Dipples?
Dipples.
Okay, so explain me what this is. It's a pastry, right?
Dipples is a
roll. I just love the name.
Dipples is a rolled pastry in honey and cinnamon,
mm-hmm.
and it's very flaky. It's like almost like a pie crust consistency, but mm-hmm. rolled and again dipped in honey and cinnamon. It's fantastic. So
you
I mean,
like
it has
it.
An interesting name.
You'll
it's
like
really
it.
Good.
Okay, so not Dipples. It just looks like Dipples. Say it for me one more time.
Dipples.
Okay. So, well, again, what a terrific event. Always fun. I kept 39 years. Congratulations mm-hmm. on that.
Thank you.
And of course, I mean, it's a great way for the Greek community to come together and for people everywhere to sample Greek food and to celebrate Greek culture. Quickly, let me ask each of you, what are you looking forward to the most? Mary Lee, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the food. I always look forward to the food and the live music. The band is Costa and the Wave, and they'll be playing live traditional Greek music throughout the weekend, and just the music I just love so much. So I can't wait for the music. Excellent. And, of course, calamari.
And, of course, the calamari. Paul Caneta, what are you looking forward to the most?
Believe it or not, as odd as this is going to sound, I really enjoy the excitement of it, the busyness of it.
Yeah.
I mean, starting from now straight through till then, it's just hectic. And I look forward to it.
It's fun.
I just enjoy the busyness to see it go from conversation to wow, we're done.
A good place to be and a good place to raise a glass of wine to celebrate when you reach that point. Dean Antonopoulos, what are you looking forward to the most?
I guess what I'm looking forward to the most is the aside from the food and wine are the church tours. Last year at Christmas, we added an icon screen across the altar, which is traditional in a Greek Orthodox church, so people this year will be able to get to see that. And then hopefully next year, we may have some prints out during the festival. We'll have some iconography that will be written on the dome and the asp of one of the walls of the church, which is also traditional in Greek Orthodox churches.
Excellent. Well, thank you all very much, Dean, Paula, Mary Lee. Thank you for coming into Art of the Matter. Great to see you here, and best of luck with Greek Fest.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thanks,
Travis. We'll see you there.
Travis DiNicola with the Greek Festival's Mary Lee Pappas. The 39th Indianapolis Greek Festival takes place on September 7th and 8th at the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church in Carmel. You can get more information at indiegreekfest.org.
Well, Sharon, this is the fringe of the fringe. The last weekend for Indie Fringe. Oh, if you haven't been, what are people waiting for?
I know.
Well, we'll talk about Fringe and all types of other things you can do this weekend and next on that calendar we call
What do we do?
What do you got going on?
Well, this is actually not Fringe, but this is something I have on my calendar because it's a chance to hear the fabulous Kellyn Strutz once again. She's a wonderful pianist, and she's joining the Indiana Wind Symphony on September 15th at 7:30 to perform Rhapsody in Blue. Other Gershwin works on the program, this is going to be a very popular one, include selections from Porgy and Bess, Strike Up the Band, Someone to Watch Over Me, and They Can't Take That Away from Me. There'll also be three works inspired by Gershwin: Donald Grantham's Fantasy Variations on George Gershwin's Prelude No.
too, Joan Towers' fascinating ribbons, and John Philip Sousa's humoresque on Suwannee. So, you know, leave it to the Indiana Wind Symphony to mix it up a little bit and do something kind of twisty. Again, that's coming up at the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. Don't think I said that part. On September 15th, 7:30.
There you go. Okay, so here's my fringe sort of wrap-up for the weekend. Okay. There's been over 300 shows, and if you haven't seen one, I don't know what you're waiting for.
That's
but
right.
Here's a couple that are still going on this weekend. You can certainly check out David Hoppe's After Paul McCartney, which features Rob Johansson. This is a play that's been performed at the IRT. It's just had great, great reviews, terrific piece, and it is still running on Sunday night. Also, Phil Van Hest, also known as Fill the Void, his new show, Public Nudity, is running on Saturday and Sunday evenings. Should be very fun. Something I'm interested in checking out, the Purlesque performance. That sounds a little bit...
do they dress like cats?
Yes, Sharon, they dress like cats. They
Aww.
Actually do. It's a kitty burlesque show, and that does take place on both
Saturday and Sunday. Are they women dressed as cats, or are they cats?
No, they're women dressed as cats. Yeah, this is not for kids. Not that one. Definitely not that one. Still a chance to see Dance Kaleidoscope in their best of Super Soul, their Motown show, on Saturday and Sunday night as well. Those are just a couple ones that that sound terrific. And then also, I wanted to mention the show, and I am not making this up, which I'm looking forward to seeing both Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's performing this weekend, and it's been described as the love child of David Sedaris and Garrison Keillor after spending the summer on a mime commune in Indiana. What more could you want? I don't know. And then,
let me out of this box.
I can't speak. See, that's what Fringe is. That Fringe is so much fun. Another one for Saturday and Sunday. The Blizzard sells out. 60 minutes featuring 30 plays, one right after the next. How fun is that? It gets your money's worth there.
That's the Bloomington Playwrights Project.
It is. Yeah, that's a really neat group.
I got to see that at BPP, and I'll tell you what, it's crazy. And
crazy.
You know the premise behind it?
Yes.
How it works?
Well, sort of. I mean, well, tell me more.
So there's a bunch of snowflakes with the numbers 1 through 33 written on them. And the audience calls out numbers at random,
and that's what
the performers perform. Yep.
Wow.
And they have to be ready,
boom, then
to go. Yeah. Now the plays are scripted, mm-hmm. but the performers have no idea what order they're going to be.
Wow.
And they're all short because they're all going to fit in a less than 1 hour fringe performance. So if there's one you don't care for, who cares?
Exactly.
The next one will be around in a moment.
There you go. That's what's so fun about Fringe. So definitely go check out some Fringe this weekend. It's the 8th annual event, and it goes through Sunday.
And don't forget that though the Fringe Festival is about to end, all of the regular theater seasons are getting ready to start. So if you
enjoyed
your hour-long performances
Phoenix
at the Fringe Festival,
and
there are 52 theater companies in Indianapolis alone.
That's a
if
lot.
You can't
One
find
for every
a,
week.
That's right. If you can't find a theater offering
theater
something
on the square
you like,
and
you're
Footline.
Not trying. That's
so
right.
many. But yeah, but check out indiefringe.org for this weekend and then all the other great theaters all the time.
Indeed. A lot of fun. Hey, your time is growing short to see a very cool show I got to see a couple of weeks ago. It is a special exhibition on view at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. It's called Snapshot, Painters and Photography, Bernard to Vuillard. And it chronicles a handful of painters, most of them French, some of them Belgian. Why is that important? Well, it draws from thousands of previously unseen photographs that were made possible by the early cameras, thank you, George Eastman, that were portable. So suddenly amateur artists and professional artists as well could carry a camera in their coat pocket and snap both formally composed photographs and snapshots. So there's all sorts of great subject matter. Very similar
I love
to what
it where they've got the photographs sort of near
the
paintings
painting
of
that
similar
it inspired.
Composition.
Right, yeah. right. And the other thing that's cool about it is how little change the world has been from, say, 1898 to 2012. A lot of the snapshots look like something you might find on your friend's Facebook pages right now. A little girl playing with her ball, a photo taken out the front window of a car of an obstruction in the road. In this case, it's a bunch of cattle crossing the road. But just very well displayed, and it's not going to be on display very many places, so you have a rare opportunity. That's only
it's
on
a huge exhibit.
It's a huge exhibit.
Give yourself plenty of time to see it.
Right, and don't be surprised, they're going to hand you a magnifying glass when you walk in, because some of the photos are really tiny. Avail yourself of that magnifying glass, but do it by September 2nd when the exhibit closes.
Hey, Vintage Movie Night taking place this weekend. It's the last Ray Harryhausen film, Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, 8 p.m. Saturday night down at the Garfield Park Arts Center. $3 tickets in advance or at the door. Why not? It's a great summer movie series. Should be a ton of fun as their Vintage Movie Nights wraps up for the summer at Garfield Park.
Well, there is so much to do the weekend of September 7th and 8th. If your dance card is not full already, though, think about this. On Saturday, September 8th, from 7:30 to 10:30, the Ambassador House and Heritage Gardens up north is going to host Fisher's Finest Evening with a historic house and gardens, the setting for a fundraising event of fine wine, hors d'oeuvres, and gourmet treats. There'll be live music by Brenda Williams and her trio on the pergola lawn, local artisan wares, and a bid for an array of wares at a silent auction. But it's an over 21 event, as you might imagine. Cooper's Hawk Winery and Restaurant and Epicurean Catering providing the food and beverage. And of course, take advantage of the chance to stroll in the beautiful gardens at the historic Ambassador House. You can find out more at ambassadorhouse.org.
Very cool. Hey, if your child is somewhat dramatic and you've been thinking, how do I channel this? Perhaps it's time to send them to the youth classes at the IRT. They are offering classes for their fall session for students ages 3. That's right, 3!
Oh, they're
18.
Brave down
yes,
at the IRT.
Yes, they are. Creative movement for kids ages 3 and 4. Wow, that should be... Sandy Rygberg's teaching that, and I just say good luck to you. But also some great classes on acting out stories and working in an ensemble and auditioning and all types of great classes, again, at the IRT for ages 3 through 18. Classes start September 22nd, and they are registering people now. And you get a 10% early bird discount if you do it before the end of August.
Fabulous. If you are part of a book club, listen up. This is kind of groovy. Book clubs around the state can borrow sets of books free of charge from a service called Novel Conversations through the Indiana Humanities. Used to be called Indiana Humanities Council, changed its name very subtly to Indiana Humanities. They now have a statewide lending library with more than 370 titles, mostly fiction and biography. They'll lend sets of books to book clubs around the state free of charge. The selection includes popular titles such as The Sun Also Rises, At Home in Midford, A Girl Named Zippy, The Art of Racing in the Rain, and The Secret Life of Bees. Books are also available, though, in the categories of nonfiction, mysteries, plays, poetry, and even young adult titles. So you can find out more at indianahumanities.org/free books.
Very cool program. Mm-hmm. Hey, last thing I want to give you a heads up on, August 31st, there's a new show opening at the Heron School of Art and Design. Actually, two shows, because they can never do just one.
Yeah, that too.
This one's titled Both Sides of the Brain is one of the shows, and the other one, It's a Book. So Both Sides of the Brain is an international Medso tent portfolio exchange and exhibition, and It's a Book includes recent productions from the new book arts program at Heron. So that will be rounding out their summer gallery offerings. Both Sides of the Brain is curated by Heron alum Aaron Coleman and features mezzo tint prints from 17 internationally established artists from 6 countries. And then Both Sides of the Brain, that's Both Sides of the Brain, It's a Book is curated by Karen Baldner and showcases work produced in the 2011-2012 school year by students who graduated with the new minor in book arts program. Very, very cool.
Isn't that great that in this era of e-books, there's a book arts program just as a startup? Well, you would, wouldn't you now?
As a book person.
As a book person. Hey, put a bug in our listeners' ear to be sure to stop by at the Penrod Arts Fair on September 8th and meet a whole slew of WFYI folks, including the elusive Matthew Sosi, who will be there with the blues stage. And be sure to tune us in because we have our regular program that day, but we also have a whole afternoon
live from Penrod
of great arts interviews. So
should be a lot of fun.
More to come and more next week on our calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
In early 2010, Indiana Humanities created Food for Thought, a 2-year program designed to create and define Indiana food culture. While the art exhibits, public conversations, and other experiences were fleeting, the group has created Food for Thought and Indiana Harvest. It's a book that uses stories and pictures to tell the stories of Indiana's food renaissance through more than 80 people. Sharon Gamble invited two of those people, duos Becky Hostetter and Sun King Brewers Clay Robinson, to join author David Hoppe in our studios to learn more.
All right, I have to admit that beer was my gateway to the locavore movement. I first started thinking about locally sourced things to eat and drink because of a local microbrew festival back in the late 90s. And I want to hear how you got started. Clay, let's start with you.
I got started with beer as well.
So, surprise.
Yes. In 1999, I had the opportunity to start brewing beer at Rock Bottom in downtown Indianapolis. So I started to become a local producer. I've always loved local beers. When I travel, I try local beers. And as I've traveled before the real heavy part of the local movement hit Indianapolis, I would hit restaurants and find locally sourced items, like on menus in Colorado where my sister lives. And that kind of sparked my interest. And then about 4 years or so ago, I went to Alaska with my fiance Staria, and her family lives in Homer, Alaska. It's like a 5,000-person town. Her parents garden and grow all summer long and actually all year round in a greenhouse. And then Homer, even though it's a really small town that's completely isolated, they work really hard. They only have one McDonald's, and that's it. That's the only corporate restaurant in the entire town. So everything else is independent restaurants, and they locally source almost everything. So here you are in this little town in the middle of actually in the far reaches of Alaska, and they have a huge local movement. So that really started to drive everything home for me.
That's fascinating. Whoa. Becky, you've been in the food business a while.
Yeah. I think I'm proud and maybe a little afraid to admit it's been over 30 years.
Whoa.
I grew up in Bloomington on a gentleman's farm, and my parents...
What does that mean?
Well, my dad was from Brooklyn. And we moved to 100 acres, and he was kind of the Eddie Albert of Green Acres, trying to learn from the residents in the area who had been longtime farmers. And we had about an acre garden. He would try a lot of different crops. Both my parents were excellent cooks, and my father was a professor, so we had a lot of students from all over the world, and I got exposed to a lot of different cuisines. And back in the 80s, we decided to open a vegetarian restaurant in the basement of an old Catholic girls' school. We had a farm market also. We had a farmer's market we would do on Saturdays, and our whole idea was to use as much locally sourced food as possible. I think we started it in 84. It's kind of hard to remember the years when we began. And we would have somebody come. Actually, the way we did the farmer's market is we had somebody come in, and we bought all their produce and then tried to sell it. It wasn't a very efficient method, but
you were a pioneer.
Well, there are lots of people doing interesting things back then as well. But so we had that restaurant for 10 years. We had a lot of heart and soul, but we were terrible business people. So I private chef for 12 years in between. And then a couple of years ago, we opened our food truck, which is Focus. It's called Duos, and it's focused on seasonal food and local food and with a vegetarian and a carnivore's perspective, and that's what we're doing. We've got a cafeteria too, so a lot happening.
David, your first awareness of or embrace of locally grown, locally sourced?
I think probably for me it started with just an awareness of the importance of independent restaurants, and here in Indianapolis that goes back to Becky's place, Essential Edibles, when that was running off of Vermont Street back in the early to mid-90s. Actually, I was aware of Becky's food even before that, when she and her husband David were catering, we used to have lunches up in the old Ferris building. And, you know, Becky and David would come in with these boxes of wonderfully local and beautifully prepared foods. And that would be our lunch. And lo and behold, before you knew it, I was sitting down at Essential Edibles over there on Vermont Street. It was wonderful. And, of course, at about that same time, people were, I think, especially at least here in Indianapolis, were becoming increasingly aware of just how important independent restaurants, the independent food business in general, could be. I mean, this was relatively new to Indianapolis, but, of course, this was something that people in other parts of the country, particularly in California, I think, had been aware of for quite some time.
You know, your stories, especially these last two stories, remind us that this is not really new. The explosion is new. Indiana is sometimes late to the game. It feels like we're not so late to the locavore movement these days. What do you think?
Well, I think it's true. This is happening all over the place. But the impetus for the book that we have coming out in August, Food for Thought, Indiana Harvest, really takes the position that I think while the locavore movement has been abroad in the land for a long time, what's happening in Indiana actually is a little bit different from what might be happening in other places. And that's in large part because we have such a rich and really deep agricultural history in this state. So we come to the locavore movement perhaps with a little bit different perspective, from a little bit different angle, and I think that makes what's going on here now really significant.
What appeals to you, Clay? You're the newest slash youngest person in the room to start a locavore business. Why did you do it?
There were a lot of reasons. Being a professional brewer for the past decade or so, I was raised by the consummate entrepreneur, so I kind of always had that entrepreneurial spirit, and I had cut my teeth, so to speak, and done my due diligence in the industry and really wanted to advance and do something for myself. I actually struggled for a period of time in the late 90s, early 2000s. My sister was living in Colorado. I'd go visit, and there were so many different elements of their culture that we were lacking here. And then even traveling around, I would see things, and, you know, a lot of what Sun King has is more of a West Coast style of brewery with a big tasting room. And, you know, it just reminds me more of something I'd seen in Washington, Oregon, California than we'd ever had in Indianapolis. And for a while, I struggled with leaving and really kind of came to the realization that this is where I'm from, it's my home, and that rather than run away or whine about not having things, that it was important to bring the types of culture, or encourage the type of culture, and bring the things that I miss from other places that I travel to our city.
If some of that message sounds familiar, it's because Clay wrote a wonderful editorial that was in the Star, what, 2-3 months ago, about committing to where you live or where you're from. You know, really, in a lot of cases, it comes down to two choices. You can either say the system's too hard to fix and leave, or commit to staying inside and fixing it from the inside.
Certainly. I didn't actually write that, though. It was Erica Smith, I believe.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
I can't take credit for someone else's work.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. It's always interesting to travel and to discover that there are local products, and that's not new. I mean, there are still, you know, parts of the country where there might be candy bars that aren't available anyplace else, microbrews that aren't available anyplace else. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about distribution? Becky, if somebody came to you and said, Duos is brilliant, I want to invest in you, and let's replicate Duos in Chicago. Let's start with the Midwest, go to Chicago, Cincinnati. Would you do it?
It sounds like a lot of work to me. I can't imagine that would be possible, because I'm too terrible about documenting things that it would be difficult to replicate. I can't even replicate a menu I did a year ago. So I find that kind of a curious thing. I understand the appeal for people, and I'm sure that's a great business model for a lot of folks. I don't know, for us, it's at this juncture, not necessarily a position that we're, you know, we're not pursuing or interested in. I think that there's, and that goes back to the whole, you know, locavore movement, whether you're focusing on, you know, when you're doing that, you have the transportation and you have all the packaging, all those things that are the antithesis of the movement. So I don't know. I don't, it's nothing that's on my radar as I'm too keen about.
Clay's shaking his head no.
I completely agree with Becky, and we've been faced with this question throughout the last 3 years as Sun King has grown, and our mission from the very beginning was to be Indianapolis's beer with Central Indiana kind of as our outlying focus. Last year we were lucky enough to win a number of awards on a national scale, and after that happened, we ended up, you know, we got calls from distributors in states all over the country. You know, we turned down, I think, 35 distributors in 28 states over the course of 2 weeks. You know, we keep investing more capital and hiring more people and growing as steadily and as cautiously and sustainably as we can to make more beer for Indy, but it's really hard to make, and it isn't our goal, like it's not Becky's
world
goal.
World domination. There's no file called world domination on your computer.
Yeah, and I get the question from people a lot, like, well, why don't we have Sun King in Cincinnati? It's really close, but part of what I believe, you know, I think that the locavore movement, and it's really heavy in craft, and there's even a new school of craft brewers that I'm friends with around the country who are people like myself who spent the last 10 years or so working for somebody else and learning a craft and that are opening breweries. So, you know, you've got Surly in Minneapolis that used to sell beer in Wisconsin and the state of Minneapolis is in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Sorry, geography checking question. So they pulled back and they just sell beer in Minnesota, and there's a number of breweries popping up all over the country. So, you know, rather than go sell Sun King in Cincinnati, we prefer to focus on it at home. And there will be people in Cincinnati who have a similar passion and connections and are committed to the place where they live. So I've actually open sourced my business plan to about 8 different brewers from around the country who have similar backgrounds and relationships with me. Yeah, I'm actually mentoring other people who are in similar positions to try to do what we're doing to create a movement where they're from. So
it strikes me that a side effect of the locavore movement is great tourism.
Yes,
because, you know, if you can only get a certain beer in Central Indiana, you have to visit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can take home a trunkload, but at some point you're going to have consumed all of it.
I was in Paso Robles, California. We are a local brewery. We sell all our beer in Indiana, but we play on a national stage, so we actually travel. I went to a beer festival in Phoenix earlier this year. I went to a beer festival in Paso Robles, California, and we actually released a beer in San Diego, California that was a part of a collaboration for the Craft Brewers Conference.
Cool.
And each one of these places, I had people who were like, we love your beer. How do we get it in California? Like, you can't. And they're like, but what are you doing here? I'm like, we're supporting the craft movement, and we were invited out to this festival, and we're here to share what we do. They're like, but I love this beer. I want to get it. And they're like, well, if you want to get it, you can wait until this event next year, and you can enjoy it as a highlight of next year.
Or you can move to Indiana.
Or you can come to Indianapolis. And that's been a big ploy with people in Chicago. They're like, I want Sun King in Chicago. Well, come visit Indianapolis. Make
Absolutely.
A weekend of it. Check out our restaurants. Stay in one of our hotels. Walk our fabulously clean and functional downtown area.
Use the cultural
And enjoy some
trail,
fresh
yeah.
local beer.
and David, in talking with folks, more than 80 Indiana producers of local stuff, food, beverage, is this a common attitude, a collaborative attitude?
Well, the 80 people that we talk to really represent a wide cross-section of people that are involved with food in Indiana. And so many of them are not necessarily locavores by any stretch of the imagination. Many of them are involved with international hunger issues and initiatives. Many of them are involved with big-time agribusiness. And so their perspectives are definitely and decidedly different from those who are, you know, focusing strictly on what's happening in their own communities.
Mm-hmm.
But the locavore movement is a very important and, I think, defining characteristic of what's going on right now. And for many people, you know, they are focused on their particular communities. But there's also an openness. You know, I think just as, you know, creative people come in all different types and stripes, and there's definitely an interest in oftentimes growing one's market. sometimes that's a necessary aspect of being able to grow one's business. I mean, many of the more notable stories of artisanal producers in Indiana turn on their ability to get their products discovered and used by renowned chefs, particularly in the Chicago market, which may now be, you know, arguably the most exciting restaurant scene in the world right now. Many people are making that case. And so, you know, for Tim Burton, for example, to get his maple syrup used in the Hotel Intercontinental in Chicago as part of its room service, or for Judy Schad to get Capriole cheeses recognized in Paris, France as outstanding goat cheese, for Greg Gunthorpe to have his products used at, you know, Rick Bayless's restaurants in Chicago, that's a really big deal. And it establishes a kind of credibility for the sorts of practices that are taking place in Indiana. It's really pretty exciting and not necessarily historically associated with this state.
Sharon Gamble with duos Becky Hostetter and Sun King Brewing's Clay Robinson, plus author David Hoppe. Becky and Clay are just two of more than 80 people profiled in Food for Thought and Indiana Harvest. The book's photos are by Kristen Hess, and its text is by David Hoppe. Learn more about the book and buy it at IndianaHarvest.com. Again, IndianaHarvest.com. And of course, you can learn more about Becky's food business, Duos, at DuosIndy.com. That's DuosIndy.com. And learn more about Clay's business, Sun King Brewing, at SunKingBrewing.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I get to chat with author Dan Wakefield and also find out about an exhibit of Picasso's at the Conrad.
I'll get a sneak preview of this year's Indie Jazz Fest, and we'll have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.